This is Greg Olson, here to tell you about my new podcast, TE1. On the show, I had a chance to talk to my fellow tight ends who have revolutionized the position from an extra lineman to a dual threat superstar. And just like my guests have changed the game, this year, NFLSundayTicket.tv is revolutionizing your NFL viewing experience. Stream all the live out-of-market NFL games every Sunday on your favorite devices and never miss a moment from your favorite players. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use the promo code GREG88 at checkout and get 15% off your subscription. That's NFLSundayTicket.tv and the promo code GREG88. Subscribe to TE1 and get NFLSundayTicket.tv, an unmatched dual threat.
Welcome to another episode of Purple Insider, an emergency episode with ESPN's Kevin Seifert to discuss the Minnesota Vikings announcing that they will not have fans at their first two home games. Kevin, what is going on?
Well, it turns out that there's this massive pandemic going around the country and around the world that is contagious when large amounts of people spend time together, especially indoors. And so the NFL has actually left it up to each team to decide if they want to allow fans into their games this season, and if so, how many. But the first step for each of those teams is to abide by any state and local regulations. And right now in the state of Minnesota, the limit of indoor gatherings, I believe, is 250 people. And so that would not be worth the trouble of opening up the stadium. And so at this point, the Vikings' early home games will be fan-free. Like most teams that aren't bound by a or at least a lot of teams are doing similar week-by-week or month-by-month decisions as the Vikings are. And so potentially it could be revisited if the state changes the regulations. But at this point, they will not have fans in the stadium.
So what is your take, having covered this all summer long and done a terrific job, by the way? Boy, the NFL never lets you sleep. last year was pass interference, and now it's a worldwide pandemic that you're covering.
I like to jump from fiasco to fiasco.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. But we will get to the XFL, which you've been covering as well eventually. So now this is an interesting approach from the NFL to go team by team and state by state, as opposed to just saying, look, no fans whatsoever. And that's, I think, reasonably concerning for a couple of different reasons. I mean, what Mike Zimmer and Sean McDermott brought up of just being unfair for some teams to have fans and other teams not. And also the idea that they have overall, aside from some false positives, played this really well to start. They got everybody in. They've had their little mini personal bubbles going on. And so far, we've had no outbreaks whatsoever. And it seems to me to let certain teams have fans in the stands is playing with fire a little bit.
It is. And it's also very interesting. You know, there's two parts of it. One is the health and safety part, and one is the competitive part, which I think is what the coaches are referring to. From the health and safety standpoint, I guess kind of what they're hiding behind is that, you know, we're just the NFL. We wouldn't know what's best for the community of Minneapolis, St. Paul, or the community of Denver, or the community of Houston. The people in that area should decide what's best for them, and the governments in those areas should be making the health-related decisions. And so I guess that's it's sort of defensible. You know, it leaves the responsibility in the hands of the people who are the medical experts in theory. From a competitive standpoint, it puts the NFL's past practices on its head. I mean, they have an entire competition committee made up of team presidents, GMs, owners, coaches, whose entire job is to make sure that everything's fair for everybody. And that not only are the games decided on a fair baseline, but that people who are gambling on NFL games can be assured that there's not going to be a baked-in advantage for one team, or if it is, I guess to make sure that it's obvious, and in this case it would be, and that there's never, you know, rules are applied to every team equally, and that every team, when they step on the field, from a rules standpoint at least, and an infrastructure standpoint, has a fair chance to win. But if you dig deeper in it, you say, well, every home stadium's a little different, and there's definitely data that shows that some teams have much bigger home field advantage than others. And so what's really at play is that those teams are losing that advantage. The Vikings obviously have a home field advantage really dating back to the Metrodome. Seattle would be crushed. At least I'm not going to say there'd be a terrible team, but like they would admit that their crowd has a big part of why they play so well at home over the years and their stadium. And so that, that's really probably what's unfair, is that some teams are losing that advantage and some teams will have a minimal advantage. Will you have an advantage if you have like an Arrowhead, if you have 15,000 people in the stadium? I don't know. But that seems to be the concern from the coaches. And it really is surprising that the NFL has decided to do that from a competitive standpoint. And again, maybe they're simply just saying that, you know, home field advantage has always been an uneven playing field, and we're not changing anything by doing that. We just have new advantages being taken.
So if you're the Vikings, though, and you play the Green Bay Packers week one with no fans in the stands, and Aaron Rodgers and his wide receivers, though not that talented outside of Devontae Adams, can hear him and communicate, and he has his best game ever at US Bank Stadium, where he has generally not played very well. And then the Vikings travel down to Lambeau, another one of the toughest places to play in the NFL, and they have a third of the stadium full, or maybe by then, I doubt this, but maybe by then we'll be in better shape with COVID, and they've got half the stadium full, and all of a sudden Kirk Cousins has to go in there and play with a much different advantage. I mean, I think the division games are the biggest problem here. When it comes to going down to Houston or Indianapolis or wherever it might be, I don't know how much that changes things because they're both playing in the same circumstances. But when you're talking about division games that might be different from now to later, that's where I think that they've got the biggest beef. Like, why do we have to play in front of fans in Lambeau, but Aaron Rodgers didn't have to come here and play in front of fans
and play in the cold? So I guess part of the Lambeau field home field advantage might be the weather, but that aside, I think the NFL has tried to get out in front of it, and a lot of people I think have said this publicly as well, that hey, guess what, this is not going to be a normal season, it's not going to be fair. We're all going to have to drop some of our otherwise well-founded concerns about parity and fairness in service of just making sure that we can have a season. I don't know that will be bought into by coaches and players, because the NFL has made lots of rule changes this year that they normally wouldn't have made to accommodate the pandemic. And they could easily just say, you know what, we'll make it fair for everybody, no fans anywhere. But my guess is that their desire what's really proved out is that their desire for fairness and parity is trumped by their desire to make some ticket revenue, basically. I don't know that we can really attribute it to anything else. If they weren't, you say what is the, you know, other than pleasing the, you know, your fan base, maybe is some small percentage of your fan base that still wants to attend games in this situation, what's the driving force behind doing this? And obviously it's revenue, and so we get that. But the other part that really hasn't been discussed yet, and I'm kind of waiting to see what the NFL says, is okay, if you're going to have an empty stadium, what are the rules of engagement for your stadium entertainment? You know, I guess the best way to put it, you know, these US Bank, all these stadiums have these great audio systems, they have lots of music, they have lots of volume. Some would argue that some franchises have a long history of knowing how to pipe in crowd noise. So what are the limitations there? And can a creative football operations department work with its creative marketing and stadium management to create some level of home field advantage? You look at the NBA and they're playing on neutral courts. Like it's not even a consideration of who's got the home court advantage or who, I'm sure there are home teams in terms of schedule, but that's just, they just wrote that off. Baseball, you know, they seem to have written it off. You know, they're playing in ballparks that are empty. But, you know, we all know the lengths to which NFL teams will go to try to gain an advantage. And so is there going to be a way to gain some kind of advantage? Do they have to, can the music play during the game? Can you, is there a limitation on decibel levels? Can you, can you put something on the screen that could potentially distract an opponent? Like, to what extent are they going to allow that? And can that be used creatively and legally to give your team a different kind of advantage?
Well, Arif Hassan on the podcast a couple days ago, he suggested playing nickelback on third down to horrify the opponent and make them really distracted and upset. But, you know, Mike Zimmer mentioned the crowd noise that it sounds like they're going to be allowed to pump in. And if it's anything like what they're doing at practice, which was how he described it, he said, if you've been at practice, then that level of noise is about what they're going to allow. It's nothing like US Bank Stadium. It more sounds like playing next to the ocean. So if you've watched Point Break and Keanu Reeves play football next to the ocean, that's a deep 80s or early 90s movie cut.
I'm aware of it, yeah.
But yeah, of course. Well, if you know Judd Zolgad, you are. It's his favorite movie.
And or old, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And Patrick Swayze. Anyway, so they play football next to the ocean. That's what it sounds like. And I mean, I don't know. Like, is that even worth it? Does that even make any difference?
No, I think that is more, you think, okay, what's the NFL product when there's not fans in the stands? It's a TV product. And so I don't think, myself watching, baseball with the ambient noise on TV, watching NBA with kind of some level of, pumped in noise, is it probably more preferable as a TV product than in silence and, hearing every squeak of the sneaker or every, I guess we would, some football nerds would love to hear every single thing the quarterback says and every adjustment that everybody, and just hear that kind of thing. And maybe you'd hear more of the actual contact that occurs and that, that could be some ambient noise. But I think it's more comforting to at least hear that ocean breeze type level of fan noise just to not be disconcerting as you start watching a game on TV.
Definitely for myself, I would love to hear the communication and how that goes on, even if we don't know what they're saying. But I would also understand if teams were like, do we really want our signals and our words that we're saying broadcast over TV? And I know that teams go back and listen, and they listen, and they watch the TV copy of the broadcast to see if they can pick up on anything.
And if the whole episode in Green Bay and in a lot of other markets that hasn't gotten quite as much of attention, in terms of the lengths that teams are going to prevent reporters from leaking out what they're seeing in practice, if that is any sign, then yes, that is a reminder of how they'll object to any broadcast of what happens during the game on the field. And also speaks to the larger issue of what we're talking about is why they're so upset about crowd noise or about fans in attendance at all. Is that the big approach that most of these teams take is that for the most part, the league has created a structure of parity that makes most teams pretty equal. It may not seem that way when you look at the standings or when you watch teams play, but from a skill standpoint, from a, from a cutting off of most obvious advantage standpoints, reversing the draft draft order every year, they work pretty hard to make every team have the potential to be competitive. And so there's a very small margin between what could be certainly 10-6 and 6-10, but even 13-3 and 4-12, and that's what these teams believe. And so it might be that everything's a wash except for one thing that they decided to do differently during training camp or one secret that they managed to keep about an injury in week 3 that makes the difference between the win that's going to put them in the playoffs or not, or put them in the number one seed or not. And I'm not saying that's true. I've not necessarily bought that. Like, I wonder if it does seem like there's some teams with a lot of talent and some teams with not a whole lot of talent and some teams with really good coaches and some that can't seem to find any. And so I'm not sure if it's as, if the league is as close as they think it is, but that's what they think. And so that explains why even the very smallest of perceived advantages is they attempt with such energy to capitalize on.
Get back to the conversation in just a minute, but first have to tell you about something very cool from our friends at SodaStick. You probably know them for Minnesota sports-inspired hats and shirts and hoodies that are screen-printed in Minnesota, but SodaStick also has artwork as well. You're going to want to check out their Man Cave prints, 20 by 24 prints representing everything Minnesota sports, from awesome throwback logos to legendary plays at first base to famous disgusting acts in Green Bay. They are on sale now for just $35. You can't go out to games at the moment, but you can liven up where you're watching them from. You want to get SodaStick's very cool prints. Go to SodaStick.com. That's SOTASTICK.com and use the promo code PURPLEINSIDER for free shipping.
As a side note, the Packers thing was funny with their general manager saying, well, we have people that read the other beat reporters. And I was thinking about my own tweets, like reporting on Ezra Cleveland eating quesaritos to make sure that he stays for weight. So you're welcome, Packers, for all
somebody,
the insight.
Somebody made a note of that. And who knows if that's what they make decisions off of. But I don't doubt that. Like when I remember, and this is off, a little off topic, I used to cover college football in the mid-90s before the internet really – was used by everyone. And I went into the coach's office one day and there was a stack of newspapers sky high. And this team, I covered the University of Maryland at the time, and they subscribed to every newspaper that covered an ACC team, that the old ACC, not the expanded one. And it would, these newspapers would come by mail like 3 days after they were published. And then they would have an intern go through these newspapers just looking for, you know, making note of all the things in a notebook, and and as long as you could get it in before the Saturday game, you were good. But this has been going on for decades for sure.
Oh yeah. And the team, the Vikings, along with I'm sure every other team, sends out an email internally with everything that was written about them that day anyway that they gather. So I mean, yeah, it's necessarily new, but who the nickel corner is for the Packers is not a secret to the Vikings, and vice versa. They know the depth chart.
And that information would normally be available anyway because there's fans in the stands in training camp. And so that was the rub, is that this year there's not, so they're going to try to keep that in-house.
Right. Well, good luck with that to the Packers. Right. Luckily, we haven't had the same issue with the Vikings. But unfortunately, going back to COVID, you know much more about the NFL's operation here, because the overall on this podcast, the stance has been, let's hope they play, and let's hope it works out and everyone stays safe. But from my perception, the measures that they've taken, at first when we were going into this, it felt like, oh my gosh, they're behind and they need to catch up fast, or they're going to end up like Major League Baseball and have outbreaks. But it seems like, Kevin, the NFL has done a very, very good job, save for the one testing issue in New Jersey, of keeping outbreaks out and giving hope to playing an entire season.
And it's gone better than I think anyone could have reasonably imagined, even in the league, even in the health and safety office, because their whole approach was, this thing is, there's too much virus out there in the country. It's going to get in, you know, people are going to get it. And we need to create a plan, not based on keeping people from getting it in the first place, but keeping it from spreading once somebody in our building gets it. And so that was the whole idea between daily testing and surveillance, is that you catch it quickly. It was the whole idea between all this contact tracing, these, you know, electronic proximity devices that they can dial up within minutes to see everyone who was within 6 feet of somebody who got infected. And they, all these protocols to try to race against time to get all the sick people and potentially sick people away from the healthy people. And in reality, almost none of the, you know, certainly none of the 3,000 plus players and coaches have even gotten it in the first place. I mean, they went an entire week without a single player and only six non-players getting infected over the course of, you know, almost 9 or 10,000 people, which is incredible. And so the real story of their approach so far has not been their their capacity for making a quick reaction to somebody getting infected. But all those people who were leaving training camp every day, and maybe they're going to the team hotel, but they don't have to. Most of them just, you know, statistically are going home and out into the community at some level, whether it's the grocery store or somebody they live with is doing that. I mean, they're exposed to the community, and but they've clearly avoided any kind of high risk behavior that would accelerate their chances for getting it in terms of going to bars or clubs or indoor restaurants, big gatherings, parties. And the people that they live with have apparently done the same. And so that's been the real real story there is that, and when you think about it, like they've got three teams in Florida, there's three teams in California, there's two teams in Texas. I mean, in places where the virus was really rampant at the start of training camp, all those community numbers have come down. But there's, I mean, it's just, I mean, I don't want to say it's miraculous, but it's as close to shocking as on a, in a positive sense than we've had with any development in the entire pandemic in this country.
It's been my take that seeing what happened with Major League Baseball was helpful for the NFL because you had the example to point to. Like, guys,
don't be that guy.
Right. Know? I mean, look what the Indians did with their pitchers, where they just said, go home. Like, get out of here. If you guys are going to take risks, then we don't even want you around, even though those two pitchers were really good. And I think that teams are feeling the same way. This is part of your responsibility to your teammates. And if you're the Vikings, it's not only, hey, the healthiest team will win, but also Dom Capers is old. Mike Zimmer is old. Gary Kubiak is old and has previous health issues. I mean, if you guys are going out to bars or anything like that or taking any risks, you are putting your coaching staff potentially at risk. And I think that at least so far, that message has gotten through. Now, whether we can go an entire season with that message, that I think is the biggest challenge. And have you, because I haven't seen anything, but you would know better than me, has the NFL said anything about how they would handle the kind of bad scenario or nightmare scenario of, you know, Aaron Rodgers and Tim Boyle both get it right before a game or something like that, like in terms of canceling games, postponing, because Major League Baseball has had to do a lot of shuffling?
They have not indicated that they're going to have a hard and fast set of rules that, like, if your starting quarterback is sick, then the game's canceled or postponed. They haven't done anything like that. And that would probably, you know, be almost impossible to figure out in a fair way, because your quarterback could get hurt the day before, 2 days before, in a normal sense, in a normal season. And it's happened. And so, like, it's maybe not fair to the opponent to, like, not be able to play the team when the quarterback gets sick, because that's part of football, is that, you know, there's times when people aren't available. But what they have done is – created a separate committee from the competition committee to avoid any conflict of interest of, like, former coaches, former players, former GMs that Roger Goodell will consult with and say, the way I understand it, here's the set of circumstances for the game. You know, this guy's out, this position group is down to four players, this quarter, you know, Tom Brady is going to be playing behind four backup offensive linemen that were on the practice squad last week, something like that. Is this a fair set of circumstances to play a competitive game? And ask these people, the Bill Polians of the world, you know, is this fair? And it'll be subjective. And when they make decisions, some people probably won't agree with it. But I think that's what they're leaning towards, is, you know, having some kind of subjective collective decision about whether the circumstances of that have presented themselves allow the teams to play a fair game. And if not, should the game just be canceled? Can it be moved back to a bye week? Should we hold on to it and play it if we need it for standings? But, you know, even Troy Vincent, who's the top football guy at the NFL, said they've been working on scenarios of how to figure out playoff standings if there's an unequal amount of divisional games. And so that's just, you know, something they're already considering. So who knows how many times that'll come up and where that red line will eventually be that would cause a game to be impacted by the amount of people that aren't available. But that sounds like that's the direction they'll go.
So if what happened the other day with the New Jersey lab happened right before a game, would they bump it or would they make Blake Lynch play instead of Eric Kendricks? Right? Like, yeah. What would they do? Because there was at least skepticism that those results weren't right, but they wanted to make sure that nobody practiced and was around anybody else for at least that day. But if it happens right before a game, would they just be able to move it? I mean, actually not having fans here, I would think makes it a little easier because then if you just have to slide it to a Monday, you slide it to a Monday to make sure you retest.
Right. Part of what people haven't picked up on yet is that the protocols that exist now, which force these players to miss this one day of practice until their 24 hours of isolation had gone by, only go through the end of training camp. The NFL and the NFLPA have not decided on what the game day testing or the regular season protocol for testing will be. They haven't even decided whether it's going to continue to be daily or if it'll go to every other day or what. And they haven't come up with a decision on where the cutoff for games will be. The easiest thing to do is just to say 2 days before the game, you take a test, we'll get it back the next day. So in other words, you take a test Friday. If you pass, you can play in the game Sunday. If you didn't, then you still have time to go through that 24-hour process of figuring out whether it's a false positive. And if it is a false positive, you can play on Sunday. That's still kind of tight because you might not find out until Sunday morning. But again, things will be different this year. The only other way they could do it, you know, is, as you say, move the game back. But again, is that fair to move the game back just because a few players, you know, a handful of players maybe aren't going to be available? Because that can happen with a regular injury as well. Or they could come up with a faster way to figure out whether it's a false positive, and whether that's saliva testing or whether that's something, some other procedure they can get health and safety backing on, that's a possibility as well. But my guess is the most convenient way is to just cut it off, you know, say you take a test 48 hours before kickoff, and there'll still be time to decide whether that was a false positive or not if it comes back that way.
We'll get back to the conversation in just a minute, but first got to tell you about TheraOne CBD. From tight muscles, tough workouts, signs of aging, to simply making it through each busy day, everyone understands what it feels like to be tense and sore, so everyone can benefit from TheraOne's CBD products. Started by Dr. Jason Worslin, TheraBody exists to provide you with the best scientifically validated natural solutions to help soothe your body and relax your mind. It started with the revolutionary Theragun percussive therapy device. When Dr. Jason saw the benefits of using CBD in his treatments, he created TheraOne to bring you CBD products done right. A lot of CBD products claim organic, but still contain up to 30% filler, and these fillers are potentially toxic. TheraOne products test 4 times before they get to you. Every product is USDA certified organic, grown in the US, and their CBD extracts are the highest quality available anywhere. Use TheraOne's warming lotion in your morning routine, the cooling lotion or massage oil to recover, body balm for targeted relief, and sleep tincture to drift away to a deep night's sleep. And now through Labor Day, Monday, September 7th, TheraOne is offering listeners buy one, get one free for all TheraOne products, but you've got to go to Theragun.com/bluewire. If you don't love what you get from TheraOne, send it back for a full refund within 30 days of purchase. This is not something TheraOne is likely to do again. Buy one, get one free at Theragun.com/bluewire. Only until Labor Day. Go right now, Theragun.com/bluewire. Sundays are coming back in the NFL with NFL Sunday Ticket.tv. You can stream every live out-of-market NFL game and every Sunday afternoon on your favorite devices, plus Red Zone and DirecTV Fantasy Zone channels. Never miss your favorite team and favorite players. No matter where you live, NFL Sunday Ticket.tv is your key to the most glorious Sundays ever. Use the promo code BLUEWIRE at checkout to get 15% off your subscription. Visit NFL Sunday Ticket.tv and use promo code BLUEWIRE.
Now, it also sounds like, in terms of the NFL taking measures here, that on the road, players will arrive, go into their hotel,
stay in their hotel rooms, play the football game, leave their hotel rooms, fly back. And that's the story. There's no, my buddy Alex Boone loved to tell stories about finding restaurants. And when he was a new Arizona Cardinal, they asked him, oh, where's to go in San Francisco before they played the 49ers?
Yeah.
And he picked a restaurant that had closed and he didn't realize it. And so that didn't go over super well with the other players. So that's a thing they do. They go out before the next game. I think if they fly in and don't do anything else and to have their food delivered, that it gives them a shot to be able to handle these road games differently again for Major League Baseball, where they're there for a couple days.
Yeah, they could potentially travel in a bubble. You know, we so much talk about bubbles and this and that. You could travel in a bubble. You could, you know, go. Everybody's at the team facility. You get on a bus where the driver has, you know, has already, or the drivers, because you're gonna have to have multiple buses for social distancing. They've all been cleared on testing. Take them. You know, these guys, even in normal situations, they go through X-rays, or they go through security usually at the team facility. So once they're on the bus, they're TSA approved. So they get driven straight onto the tarmac. Usually they get on the plane with, you know, just themselves, who all are presumably negative, and the flight attendants and the pilots, who are presumably negative because they would have tested, to go to a hotel. They already have all these protocols for how you enter the hotel, and the hotel has to have a separate entrance for you. And they want them potentially on low floors, so you don't have to take the elevators, all different kinds of stuff. Probably not. Usually you have a team meeting Saturday night in the hotel. Don't need to do that. Zoom that. So you're in your room. It stinks. It's no fun. You're probably going to get restless. You're probably nervous for the game on Sunday, but that's just the way it's going to be. Then you go back down, you go out the same entrance the next morning. Go get on the same, you know, with the same drivers or drivers who have already been approved. You go to the stadium where nobody is, you know, at least where you enter, nobody is. You're in the locker room just with your people. Go on the field where almost nobody is going to be on the field except for team personnel for both teams. And then reverse it, go to the airport and come home. And so you probably didn't want that much detail, but that's how you can travel.
So the answer is yes. Yes,
yeah.
They could.
Yeah, yes.
So. Well, it's going to be fascinating to see how all of this stuff plays out. But I think that in terms of making it feasible, they've done everything they possibly can here. Before we talk about The Rock and the XFL, you think the Vikings play with fans at any point this season?
You know, like if I had to bet, I would say no, because, you know, it seems like Minnesota is in a decent spot. But they're not. It doesn't appear as though the governor is looking to loosen any regulations at this time. Not a political statement. That's just the way he has been operating. And so, as it gets colder and more people are inside, and the flu and all the things that we're being told potentially could exacerbate the situation, it's hard to imagine there being a time when you get to where he's allowing more than 250 people to gather indoors. But we don't know. We don't know about vaccines. We don't know about new therapeutics. We don't know about testing. We don't, you know, it's been hard to know exactly where things are going, but, you know, in terms of the over under on 50%, I'm certainly taking the over on 50% that the likelihood of them not having fans at any point this year.
Yeah, I think so too. And, you know, the NFL will be okay. You know, it'll be all right. They'll still make some money. They'll still survive, and it'll be all right. Personally, I'm a little kind of nervous about letting fans in because of the video that was out there of Kansas City fans watching training camp, and they're supposed to be wearing masks the whole time, and there's nobody wearing masks in the whole video. And it's like, you know, you in a way, you're also, when you let fans in, you're asking somebody to now be the mask police. It's
right
to say, oh, everyone has to wear a mask, but then are you going to go, you know, in the third quarter and throw someone out of the game, throw a group out of the game because they don't have their masks? Like that becomes very difficult.
Yeah. And no one wants to do that. And it's not even just the mask, it's social distancing. Like, you know, if you feel so strongly about going to a football game that you're going to go during a pandemic, then you're probably going to get your money's worth and you're going to probably be good and liquored up, which is your right, you know, and what we do at football games. But your ability to follow all these unnatural regulations is going to be that much harder. Like in terms of you know, how are you going to keep people away from each other? I know that I saw the Dolphins are going to have they're kind of like tarped over certain seats, and so you can only sit in it. But, you know, so what? I've seen people lying across entire rows of seats, you know, during football games, because that's – it's crazy, you know. And so, you know, it would seem very hard to, number one, enforce that, and number two, to think that it's gonna work. And so, you know, maybe the play is you put all the responsibility on the fans, and if it doesn't work, if they get sick, it's their fault. I don't know, but if you're gonna have the normal fan experience or anything close to it, even if there isn't tailgating, there's plenty of ways to get drunk before a game, and during a game. Then it's hard to see how all those things will happen. Even if people are sober, like, I don't think you want to be having confrontations with, you know, yellow coat security people. I mean, that's not what they signed up to do. You know, no one wants to have these viral things, moments happen in the stands when you're already out on a limb by allowing anybody out in there in the first place.
Yep. I think it's, they really are, like I said before, playing with fire. I think by trying to get just a little bit of money here, 13,000 fans, I don't know, maybe they hope that they can jack up the prices for those tickets because they're scarce or something. Yeah. I don't know. Now The Rock bought the XFL, and that is amazing. And if you, I tweeted this at you, but if you get to talk to The Rock about the XFL, I will hate you because I will be so incredibly jealous of that. Okay. I love that The Rock bought the XFL, and I cannot wait to see what he does with it. I loved the version of the XFL that we had. It gets shut down by a pandemic. I thought it was going in a really good direction. PJ Walker is now a backup quarterback in Carolina. He was exciting to watch. What is The Rock going to do with the XFL, Kevin?
It's interesting. The first thing I know, like, he's obviously gotten the most attention, but the interesting thing is that his ex-wife and his current business partner, Danny Garcia, has been sort of the one speaking publicly about the league. And she seems like it's going to be more in her wheelhouse in terms of having a day-to-day management, because The Rock is doing Rock things. You know, it's not have, you know, going to be time to sit in the XFL
saving
office.
The globe and so forth.
A lot of more important things. And then there's also the Redbird Financial Capital Partners is sort of this financial firm that seems like it has a you know, significant sway on in the financial part of how it's going to work as well. And so I, you know, they initially, when they first were awarded the league through bankruptcy, they touted the fact that the XFL had already come up with sort of a bubble tournament style season that would be made for TV only, and not necessarily even for a pandemic, just for a way to operate at much lower cost in case they ever needed to do that. And so they have an arrangement, or at least an infrastructure in place in terms of how they could have a 2021 spring bubble football tournament. But things are happening in real time. That was before the Big Ten and the Pac 12, you know, imply that they might move to the spring. Like, I still don't know if that's a real thing or not, but then you're talking about a more crowded spring environment. If the NFL has to push their season back at all, that goes into that window where the XFL normally had put itself in the post Super Bowl, pre baseball, you know, NBA type, NBA playoff type window. And so, I think the short answer is they're not sure yet. I don't think that they are looking to invest, you know, like, Vince McMahon dropped $200 million into this, and he got $15 million back, and, you know, and who knows what other financial ramifications there were to doing all that. But I don't think that there's any plans for this group to do something similar. So it's going to have to support itself. And the only way to support a professional sports league is through TV or streaming revenues. And so the agreements that the XFL had with ABC, Disney, ESPN, Fox, all that last year was did not give them any, you know, there were no rights fees there. The networks paid for the broadcasting and production costs, but they did not provide a rights fee to the XFL. the AAF, they were paying CBS to go on. And so that was almost like an infomercial situation. But so I don't know, like, if they have the leverage to go to any network and say, hey, pay us money to go to come do our bubble league next year. And if they don't, I'm not sure that they're looking to jump in and start going into debt right away. And so we'll see if that's the case. But they have that opportunity to do a bubble, but I don't know if you wanted to look at that, or if you wanted to, you know, in terms of like Rock's, you know, what the tone of it will be, will it be any more outlandish? I don't think so. I think he and Danny Garcia has said this as well. I think they liked the fact that this was a serious football league that had a little bit more, you know, didn't take itself nearly as seriously as the NFL does, was willing to make, you know, lots of changes, was willing to play a different brand of game, was willing to be much more interactive with fans and all that. So I think they liked that part of it, and maybe they'll magnify some of those things a little bit more. But I don't think that they have any kind of like WWE mm-hmm. motif in mind, or any outlandish things, or like that they want to make it the league where you're allowed to hit with your head, or, you know, right. kill people, that kind of thing. And so I everything I can tell is that they really liked what was happening, and maybe they see some things where they could put their own signature on, but it'll still be marketed as serious football. Mm.
Who can swing from a cable off of a burning building and fight bad guys gets the ball first is how The Rock wants it. Well, I'm going to speak my idea into existence. I think this should be an HBO thing, a Netflix thing, where they go behind the scenes, Hard Knocks, without the NFL watching over their shoulder, and then stream the games, but make them as like more of a, what's the college football one? Last Chance U? Make it more of a Last Chance U that will grab a wider audience because of the drama and the stories. And then for the hardcore football people, for you and I that want to watch Cardale Jones play the whole football game, we can. That's my idea. But I don't know. I mean, maybe they end up landing top college players or something who are looking to help themselves in the NFL draft because of, you know, college football being canceled.
Yeah, there is the potential for, at least not long term, but for a quick 1 year diversion that would, you know, I don't think the very best college football players would need or want to put themselves through an XFL or any kind of, you know, health risk between now and the draft, but there's a lot of Big Ten players and a lot of Pac-12 players who were probably on the bubble of the draft or were, you know, are now probably considered like a late round type, but if they put five, you know, good games together in the XFL bubble, could be a first round pick. That's not out of the question. And so they'll have much more talent and young talent available to them. And then an extra audience, those, you know, if five players from Oregon and five players from Ohio State and five players from Michigan, you know, not necessarily the best, but people who were, you know, right on the cusp, go to the XFL, all those schools' fans will have much more interest in it mm-hmm. than they otherwise would have. So that's a possibility for like a 1 year diversion.
Well, The Rock, call me, or Rock. Do you address him as The Rock or Rock?
I was thinking of calling him DJ. Next time I see him, I'll just say DJ.
Good luck with that.
That's what Danny Garcia calls him.
So. Yeah. Okay. Well, when I tweeted, I mean, sort of jokingly, but tweeted at him like, make it a reality show, Rock. I was like, should I have said make it a reality show, comma, The Rock?
Just tag him at, I think he's at The Rock.
So. Yeah, he is at The Rock. Yeah. I thought if you call him Dwayne, it sounds sarcastic. Like, come on, Dwayne.
Yeah. He's
well, the XFL.
That's his name. That's what it shows on the credits of his blockbuster movies.
That is true. That is true. Kevin Seifert, you've done an incredible job covering all the stuff with COVID and so forth that is as complicated as NFL rules. So you were prepared for this well the NFL rules. And I appreciate your coverage and all of your time today. Perfect timing with the NFL or with the Vikings deciding not to have fans. So thanks for coming on, man. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
Did somebody say playoffs, NBA, and NHL are playing for the gold, and our partners at BetOnline have you covered? Get in on all the action, including a new NBA bracket contest with plenty of chances to win. MLB season is pushing into the fall. There's no shortage of ways to bet on hundreds of odds, futures, and props there. So take advantage of the return to sports, and remember, the casino never closes. Check it out all day, all night. Go to betonline.ag. Use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your welcome bonus. That's betonline.ag, code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.